Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Today our program is, Are You Being Gaslighted? What Are the Telltale Signs? In 2007, Dr. Robin Stern coined the phrase gaslight effect to explain the long-term effects of repeated gaslighting, an insidious and sometimes covert form of emotional abuse, in which a gaslighter undermines and controls another person by deflecting, twisting, and denying their reality. Gaslighting can happen in a romantic relationship, between family members, or at work. But in every case, it leaves you constantly second-guessing yourself, unable to make simple decisions, and become destabilized from the constant reality shift. Also, have we been politically gaslighted on a national level? We have big things to do. Our interview guest today is Dr. Robin Stern. Dr. Stern is the co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence and co-developer of RULER, an evidence-based approach adopted by over 4,000 schools worldwide. Dr. Stern is a licensed psychoanalyst with 30 years of experience and the author of Project Rebirth, The Gaslight Effect, The Gaslight Effect Recovery Guide, and the host of the Gaslight Effect podcast. Dr. Stern offers invaluable insights into the dynamics of gaslighting and its impact on emotional well-being. She regularly contributes to esteemed publications and media outlets on topics related to psychology and emotional intelligence. Dr. Stern, it is such an honor. Thank you for being our guest. Welcome to Be Bold America.
Well, thank you, Be Bold America, for inviting me and for shining a light on such an important topic as gaslighting. I'm delighted to be here, and please call me Robin.
Oh, thank you, Robin. Well, to begin, I wanted to say that the book's description states that you coined the phrase gaslight effect, but you really did much more than that. You identified this particular pattern of emotional abuse that no one else had seen before. You didn't just coin the phrase gaslight effect, but you witnessed it over and over again and needed to put a name to it. Tell us how this happened, and please define what the gaslight effect is. You also say it's one of the worst parts of gaslighting is how hard it is to identify. What is it?
Yes. So I'll start somewhere in answering your question. So gaslighting is an insidious and sometimes covert form of emotional abuse. Repeated over time, that's important, repeated over time, where the gaslighter, usually the more powerful person in the relationship, leads the target of a gaslighting to question their judgments, their reality, and extreme cases, their identity and their sanity. And the gaslighter leads the target to questioning himself or herself or themselves by manipulating the conversation, by pivoting at some point and either deflecting responsibility, blaming, lying outright, or shifting the focus of the conversation. So I'll start there. I was fascinated with the movie Gaslight. The 1944 version was the version that I watched repeatedly with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer. It was originally a story made into a play by Patrick Hamilton. And then there was another movie and then the one by Ingrid Bergman with Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer. And what fascinated me was that here was this woman who fell in love with this guy. The guy turned out to be a diabolical manipulator, and the woman, played by Ingrid Bergman, was this adoring, loving young person who fell for the charm, and I would call him a glamour gaslighter, gaslighting of Charles Boyer. The character he played was Gregory, and in the movie, he was interested in stealing her family jewels. But what he was doing in order to have access to her family jewels was manipulating the gaslight in the home that they were staying in. It was set in Old England, and there were gaslights, and he would walk about the house and turn on the gas light or turn up the gas light. And then she would say, did you notice that the gas light was flickering more brightly when you were upstairs or something like that? And he would say, no, you're imagining that. I didn't notice that. And what was so interesting was here's this woman who was strong-minded, confident, or so it seemed, become very unsure of herself in a very short time. So we watched her become very unsure of herself. Initially, the Gregory character said to his wife, going to give you a present, and I don't want you to lose it. After all, you are forgetful these days. And Paula, again played by Ingrid Bergman, said, I'm not forgetful. Don't be silly. Of course I'm not going to lose it. And then he said, well, you do remember, I'm putting it right in your bag here, this present I'm giving you. And she said, of course I remember. Don't be silly. Of course I remember. But then very shortly, in the movie, it probably took about 10 minutes. In real life, it can take weeks, sometimes months. The woman, again, Paula, began to think, maybe he's right, because now I can't find the brooch. Now I can't find that piece of jewelry, and I don't know what happened to it. So maybe it's me. Of course, the audience watching it knows that he, in fact, stole it out of her purse. But she doesn't know it. And without anything obvious to point her finger at, besides herself, she, like many women do, unfortunately, points her finger at herself and says, it must be me. I was seeing that in my practice. Importantly, I was seeing in my practice a repeated pattern. Women who were very successful in their lives, very confident, very good at decision-making, were suddenly crumbling at the hands of a relationship where the more powerful person was leading them to second-guess themselves by telling them either they were paranoid or they were too sensitive or they just made it up. They imagined something that they're saying that the guy agreed to when, in fact, he didn't. And women would come into my office and say, well, you know, I don't know. What do you think is true? What do you think is real?
Well, one of the things that you also mentioned is it's mostly men in your experience gaslighting women. And you mentioned it also just now that many intelligent, strong, and independent women have fallen prey to gaslighting. What are the vulnerabilities that contribute to someone being susceptible?
Well, first let me say that anyone can be vulnerable to gaslighting. It happened that in my private practice over these many years, several decades, I've seen mostly women coming in reporting about their male gaslighters. But I've also seen and spoken to and worked with men who were being gaslighted by women. Mm. I've also treated and worked and spoken to women who were gaslighted by other women. And people are gaslighted in their families. I just recently wrote a piece about that appeared in the Washington Post with my colleague Mark Brackett, Gaslighting in Families. Very common. And in the workplace, doesn't have to be a woman being gaslighted by a man. It just happens that I wrote the book at a time where that was the pairing I was seeing most often.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense because women typically, and even though now we hope it's changing a bit with lots of infusion of emotion skill building and emotional intelligence early on in schools and education and training for girls and boys, but women are taught more so than men to accommodate. Women are taught to please, to be nice, to try to be empathic, to see things from another point of view. And you can be so empathic as to get stuck in someone else's shoes and forget about the shoes you're standing in yourself. So when you need a relationship, when you have a hard time walking away unless somebody feels good about you, when you can't stand the back and forth and you need to be right and you need to prove your gaslighter wrong, it's going to be really hard to walk away from gaslighting. And you're vulnerable. We're all vulnerable to people who seduce us. And I don't mean that in any way, but a possible way. Mm-hmm. Who treat us into a relationship. We're falling in love. We're falling in friendship. We're close to the person who we work with. And we're all vulnerable to wanting that relationship. What is different in gaslighting is that when somebody extends the first bait, if you will, well, come on, Jill, aren't you a little paranoid? If you are someone who's going to stand up to gaslighting, not vulnerable, really knows your mind, or in that moment feels really strong-minded, you can say, no, that's not the case. And if you persist in that, if your guy persists or someone persists, you just are going to have to agree to disagree, right? But if you are more vulnerable, you may think, God, maybe they're right. And then you let go, perhaps, of what complaint you came to that person to begin with.
Well, you also explain that the gaslighter, one of their motivations for this emotional abuse is they have to be right. Tell us more about that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So gaslighters are very certain. And they're, to use a psychological term, their self-cohesion depends on it. So in a conversation, if a gaslighter or someone who's going to engage in gaslighting gets anxious, feels like they're losing their footing, doesn't want to tell the truth, feels that they're on the spot, needs to deflect something, wants to control the moment, the way they can right themselves is by relying on their certainty of whatever it is they want to put across. And sometimes they're going to make it up just to get you out of the path that you're on. But often it really is something that they believe, and they will insist on it over and over again. Because if you're, for example, saying, well, I can't reach you, you know, really having trouble reaching you when you're not at home. You say you're at the office, but I can't ever get through. And if your gaslighter says to you, well, you're so paranoid. You may be paranoid, but you still can't reach him. Maybe you're paranoid because you can't reach him. And so in that moment, he, in order to not take responsibility, he's convinced himself with certainty that the problem is you.
Certainty, there's a confidence behind that, that even if the person's wrong about what they're certain, it just comes across as fairly powerful. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 89.5, 89.7, and 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Also, listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. Our topic today asks, are you being gaslighted? What are the telltale signs? And our guest is Dr. Robin Stern. Dr. Stern is the co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. She is a licensed psychoanalyst with 30 years of experience and the author of Project Rebirth, The Gaslight Effect, The Gaslight Effect Recovery Guide, and now the host of the Gaslight Effect podcast, which I have subscribed to. Find more about Dr. Stern at robinstern.com. That's RobinStern.com, or connect with her on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Todd Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
This is KSQD, Santa Cruz, 90.7 FM, KSQT, Prunedale, 89.7 and 89.5 FM, and KSQD.org.
We're back. Would you like a friend to hear this interview on Are You Being Gaslighted? What are the telltale signs? We'll tell them this interview and many other Be Bold America interviews are available as a podcast. They may subscribe for free from their favorite podcast platforms such as Apple, Google, Spotify, and Radio Public. Our guest today is Dr. Robin Stern, co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. Now, Dr. Stern, or Robin, you're welcome. I really was reading your book and underlining and checking. And so tell us more about or describe the stages of gaslighting. You say that gaslighting can bend your mind even more powerfully than physical abuse. And what is the gaslight apocalypse you identify in stage one?
Lots of questions. Well, I'll start with the what you asked first, which is the stages of gaslighting. What I noticed in my practice through the years is that initially somebody would come in with a complaint about their partner or their date or their friend saying something that they thought was kind of weird. Similar to the movie incident that I described where Paula lost the piece of jewelry that Gregory gave her. Paula put away the piece of jewelry that Gregory gave her, and as she was putting it away, he said, "Don't forget where you put it," or something like that. "You're so forgetful." And things like that happen where somebody may say, "Well, you know, it is a little weird that you want to just sit here in the movie theater when I'm waiting on the popcorn line. Don't you want to stand with me?" You know, and that may seem like a very simple, silly example even to bring up from a case that I worked on where the woman thought it was odd that he would even say anything about it. They sat down. She was going to sit in the seat. He went to get some candy and refreshment, and he made such a big deal about it, and she thought, "That's really strange." And when he came back to the seat, he said, "Well, you know, I guess it's hard for you to be connected to somebody so quickly." And it had nothing to do with being connected. She sat down and she was saving seats. So that's an example of something that somebody might say very early on in a relationship that just seems odd. And as the person receiving the information, you're not likely to think initially there's anything wrong with you. But over time, as we were just talking about, if with certainty your gaslighter keeps saying, "Well, there's something wrong with you that you were not with me on that line. It was our first date or second date, or I expected you to be, and what were you just sitting there for? Something wrong with you." In stage one, you begin to open the possibility that maybe your gaslighter is right and there is something wrong that you didn't notice before. And so in stage two, which I call defense, stage one, disbelief, stage two, defense, it's characterized by ruminating and going over and over and over the conversation you just had, the difference of opinion you have, and interpersonally, it's characterized by your defending yourself. So your gaslighter says, "I can't believe you're carrying on about this. You're being so dramatic. Maybe it's just that maybe that's it. You're just dramatic." And so "No, I'm not dramatic. No, that's not. Of course I'm going to react like this." And so then you're fighting about whether or not you're dramatic, rather than whatever it was that came up that you reacted to begin with. And it can be very crazy-making in that stage, because the point is, it doesn't matter who's right or wrong. You're caught up now in what I call the gaslight tango, and you're dancing with your gaslighter, who's more powerful, whose opinion you can't bear not to have him think well of you or her think well of you, so you can't bear to walk away while you're caught up in that defending yourself and rumination. And then stage three, depression. And some people have talked to me about feeling that stage three is really soul-destroying for them. And it really refers to a time when you've been gaslighted for a long period of time, and you're no longer the same person you were when you entered the relationship. You have way more self-doubt, much less ability to make a decision. You feel more isolated, and you've probably isolated yourself because it's hard to talk about the relationship. You're often depressed. You avoid talking about your relationship with others because you don't want to hear what they have to say. And you may feel a lot of shame at this stage. But with your gaslighter, you're more often on his side than on your own. So I'm thinking about someone I work with, and I wrote about this in this case. And the first edition of the gaslight effect, person went to buy her husband salmon. Walking around the grocery store, she realized she was too late to buy the wild-caught salmon. And she was already anticipating how her husband was going to take her apart psychologically for not getting to the grocery store early on so that there'd still be some of that left, and instead she had to get the farm-raised salmon. And while she was going through that in her own mind, she was already agreeing with him. I'm sure he's right. He's going to tell me that I don't love him enough. I guess it's true, because if I loved him enough, I would have made sure to get to the grocery store early enough. And so in that case, she would come in and say, it's right. Isn't that true? That if I really loved him, I would have gotten to the grocery store early enough. And then very sadly, heartbreakingly, she would then blame herself, put herself down in exactly the way he would.
Just took it on, his role. Now, the gaslight apocalypse, what's that?
The apocalypse is something that keeps you in the relationship, keeps things going, because it is something, some huge thing, something that would be apocalyptic, that you're afraid of. So the apocalypse, for example, in workplace gaslighting could be as simple as, I may lose my job if I confront my gaslighter, if I step away from that power struggle. It could be in a romantic relationship, I don't want to be alone. I don't want to be without a boyfriend, or I don't want to be without this boyfriend, or I don't want to be without that friend. It could be fear of being humiliated, or fear of being yelled at. Could be your boyfriend, your boss, your friend, your parent has a horrible temper, and you'll do anything to avoid that kind of retaliation or reaction. So you're certainly not going to say, hey, I don't feel good about the way you're talking to me, or I don't like when you manipulate our conversations, or I notice that you're doing this and I'm uncomfortable. None of those things are safe if you fear the apocalypse.
You also talk about there being different types of gaslighters. What are they?
I've noticed in my practice that, and in my personal life and lives of friends, that there are three types of gaslighters. The glamour gaslighter, who creates a special world for you. For example, imagine that your guy hasn't called you in several weeks. You're dating and you can't understand what happened, and you reach out and you can't reach him. And instead of when you finally see him, whether it's you reached him or he reaches you, instead of either apologizing or there being some explanation that makes sense to you, the glamour gaslighter will try to, with a sleight of hand, almost like a magician, distract you from that, the fact that he hasn't called, the fact that you couldn't reach him, by buying you gifts or telling you, reminding you that you have this special soulmate connection, or by becoming intimate in a way that catches you up and that's all you can think about. So the glamour gaslighter is someone who can be very charming and very giving and very loving, and with whom it's very hard to be angry without being caught up right back into that romantic bubble. And then there's the, does that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, definitely. Okay. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And with, I'll just add a few details. So with a glamour gaslighter, you feel like you do have your own special world. And the fights and disagreements, as I'm saying, are usually followed by these intense times of closeness. And you might even, in talking to your friends about your glamour gaslighter, you might even hear, oh, my God, he's so romantic. On the other hand, there may be times where your impression of your glamour gaslighter doesn't match your friend's impression at all. So the good guy gaslighter is somebody who can be easy to be with, very affable, basically feels like he gives you everything you want, will often give in after hours and hours of fighting, but may, in fact, not entirely give you what you want, may, in fact, drive you to the point of feeling mad yourself while you're on your way to getting what you want. One of the cases that I work with, the couple was having a fight about going to visit her relatives. And by the time her husband agreed to visit the relatives, she was exhausted and so irritated because he had come up with so many different reasons about why it would be not a good idea. They weren't really wanting to see her. She was overestimating the time that they would be together, would how positive it would be. She was underestimating how much work they both had to do at home and why they shouldn't go. But finally, he gave in. And then when she was exhausted and kind of down on the ride to her family, she said, what are you complaining about? I gave you exactly what you wanted.
Hmm.
So that's an example of good guy gaslighter. You're fighting endlessly. He may give in, or he gives in, and then you go to your family, and he's pouting the entire time. Or you go with a friend somewhere, you've been fighting a lot about whether to go to one movie or another, or spend the day together in one way or another. And finally, your friend says, okay, let's do it your way. But then while you're actually at that event, your friend is withdrawn and you feel like you're being punished.
The third type is the intimidator, and I'd like to take a break right now. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 89.5, 89.7, and 90.7 FM, Many Voices, One Station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. I am speaking with our bold guest, Dr. Robin Stern, who is co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. Find more about Dr. Stern at robinstern.com. That's RobinStern.com. Or connect with her on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. We will be right back after Jim Hightower's commentary titled, A New Political Party That's the Same Old Business as Usual.
As John Mellencamp sings, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. True. And it's equally true that if you stand for everything, you won't amount to anything. In a remarkable achievement, a newly formed political party calling itself No Labels has managed to fall into both traps, standing up for everything and nothing at all. The fledgling entity is using every synonym in the book to assure everyone that it is a middle-of-the-road bipartisan centrist, both sides party, offering hybrid liberal-conservative solutions that won't offend anyone. But wait, they've chosen a multimillionaire coal baron and a multimillionaire son of a global plastics polluter to be their standard bearers. As a presidential ticket, Democrat Joe Manchin and Republican John Huntsman probably would unite voters of both parties against them. While they don't stand for much, there is one huge overriding issue that the no-labels hucksters strongly agree on: corporate money contaminating American politics. These, quote, reformers are in favor of it. Indeed, secret fat cat donations are the no-labelers' financial lifeline, having already hauled in hundreds of thousands of dollars from right-wing corporate interests. Such as, no, say the founders, we can't tell you who's buying the no-labels label, for the funders don't want the public to know their names or their special interests. Of course, secret funding of elections equals secret government of, by and far, the funders. By standing against the people's right to know, the group has put a flaming neon fraud label on their hokey reform party. Huntsman even admits it, saying financial disclosure would be the right thing to do, but, quote, that's not the way you play the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, the game? Just what we need, another gang of corporate politicos who think governing America is a game to be won by hook or crook. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Welcome back. My guest today is Dr. Robin Stern, co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. And our topic is, are you being gaslighted? What are the telltale signs? Now, Dr. Stern, you covered the types of gaslighters. The first one was a glamour gaslighter. Second was the good guy gaslighter. And if you don't feel finished about the good guy gaslighter, then continue with that. And I know number three, since I read your book, is the intimidator.
Yeah, so thank you for bringing us back to where we were. I will say a couple of things about the good guy gaslighter. One is that it's often hard, like with the glamour gaslighter, hard to spot it because you either are getting your own way or sometimes you don't get your own way, but you've given in. Somehow you figure that was probably a better solve for the back and forth you're having. And yet, when you think about your life, he's a nice guy. Things go pretty well most of the time. So it's harder to identify because it's not always, the gaslighting is not always in your face. And you do get to do a lot of what you want. The glamour gaslighter has some of those same features in that oftentimes you're focusing on the romance. You're focusing on the closeness. And forgetting about the times in between when you have felt like there was something off, but you just didn't know what it was. And then as you start to question your gaslighter, suddenly you're wrapped up in this romantic bubble again. But with the intimidator, gaslighter, it's pretty obvious. You're being bullied. He's laying a guilt trip on you. He's withholding. And it can be scary, and it can actually be very unsafe with an intimidator gaslighter. So if you find that your partner puts you down or finds other ways of treating you with contempt, tries to humiliate you when you're alone as well, you might be involved with an intimidator. Or if your partner uses silence as a weapon against you, either to get their way or to punish when you displease them, again, intimidation. Or if your partner or your friend or your parent frequently or periodically explode into anger, if you feel fearful in their presence or at the thought of spending time with them, if your partner mocks you openly and then says, just kidding, or just teasing, or what's the matter with you?
No, I hate that. Just kidding is a real red flag for me. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Does your partner frequently threaten to leave you if you displease them or threaten you with one of the apocalyptic happenings that you're so afraid of? Does your partner frequently or periodically evoke your worst fears about yourself? You're so demanding. There you go. You're just like your mother.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some ways that you can tell that you're involved with an intimidator. But an intimidator just in his approach to you or her approach to you or their approach to you was going to be a lot easier to identify in their behavior than a good guy gaslighter or a glamour gaslighter.
Now, to shift to something larger, you also talked about living in a gaslight culture. Regarding nationally, I feel that just about every person in this country is constantly second-guessing themselves regarding what we read and hear, and that we are unable to make simple decisions because of the conflicting political viewpoints, and we feel destabilized from a constant reality shift. Has the country been gaslighted, and if so, how and by whom?
Well, that's pretty complicated topic. But I'll answer in this way. First of all, I am not a political pundit. I am not an expert on cultural gaslighting. But I do live in this world, and I am an expert on gaslighting and the gaslight effect.
And you must observe it everywhere when you see it.
And yes. I observe it everywhere, absolutely. And over the pandemic, there was even more fertile ground for gaslighting to occur in that we were in a period where things were completely unpredictable, where we all felt, at least in part or at times, out of control. And that kind of ongoing cultural moment that leads us to anxiety and uncertainty and feeling destabilized is where gaslighting has its best chance of taking hold. So you already feel uncertain about what's going on. Things are already unpredictable. And so if somebody comes along who's very certain and certain that it's you to blame or certain that there's something wrong with you, it might be a lot easier to buy it interpersonally than at another time where you feel strong-minded yourself. But when you put on one news channel and you hear reality, and then you put on the next news channel and you hear reality, and you're living in a world where people are fighting over what you thought you knew for sure was reality, it can be very destabilizing and very hard to make, as you said, make simple decisions or make decisions at all. And for so much of the time, people were arguing about, is masking okay all the time? Or am I being too overprotective? Am I not being protective enough? Should I get vaccinated? Should I not get vaccinated? And while there might have been agreement in the world at many different times among some people, there always were people giving you the other side of it. And it could be as simple as changing the channel. So I think that we definitely lived even more so in a gaslight culture. And of course, when I wrote my book in 2007, people were talking about gaslighting in relationships in terms of the behaviors. But of course, as you said, when I wrote The Gaslight Effect, I helped to name that for people. And while the important pieces of gaslighting are what happens between people and the behaviors and facial expressions, tone of voice, and emotional back and forth, naming it had a significant impact on so many because once you can name something, then you can begin to address it. And it's also part of the science that we work with at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence that when you can name an emotion, you can begin to, we say, tame an emotion. So we've made some inroads being able to name the gaslighting. And as a matter of fact, then, the newspaper started talking about it in the run-up to the election in 2018, so that in 2016, people were talking about gaslighting and talking about Donald Trump being a gaslighter. People would call me and say, well, what do you think? You're the expert on gaslighting. Is he a gaslighter? And I would say, what I'm going to say to you right now, look at his behavior. If that sounds like gaslighting to you, if that looks like gaslighting to you, then that's the answer. And so what we would see during that time were political leaders who were experiencing something that we would witness on television, and then that same something would be denied. So many people were saying, well, what is going on? No, I definitely saw that. But then it's pretty hard to think that leaders anywhere, especially of your own country, would be denying something that in fact happened or changing their mind. Were saying they never said something that they did say. So there was a lot of that in the air, a lot of accusations going on, and gaslighting became much more popular at that time as a word to be reckoned with, as a term to be understood. And then, of course, in 2022, it was word of the year. So I don't know if that goes some distance towards answering your question.
Yes, yes.
But I do think that it's very hard when there are conflicting views in so many places to hold on to your reality, and that's something that's really important to do in gaslighting, to stand in your integrity, to hold on to your reality, to decide what your reality is if you have conflicting pieces of information. And how do you make that decision? How do you trust yourself to know that you can make a decision like that when people around you are telling you that they have the decision?
I think we're currently being gaslighted regarding January 6th because many people saw an insurrection and, you know, the stopping in a democratic process. And there are others calling it, oh, it was just a mob. It was just a riot. Nothing to see here. And I think that's just going on right now. I also looked up, and I thought this was interesting, I also looked up on the Merriam-Webster Dictionary website and found on the homepage they have a top lookups right now, which they really mean right now at the moment because it changes and shifts. And while I was on the site, the word gaslighting moved from number 8 to number 4. People were, right at the moment I was on, looking at that. What does it feel like to have identified something and then the word is now in our vernacular and being used, to help us understand when somebody is trying to do this to us? What does that feel like as a scholar and a person?
I'll answer like this. Even when I wrote the book, I felt like I was carrying a message from the many people I have treated, from my patients, from many people I've taught, my students and my friends and family, that the world needed to hear, and that I was privileged to be able to bring that message out there. And I do feel like that. It's been a privilege to, and an honor to sit with people who have trusted me enough to share their stories, feel safe with me enough that I will use their stories in a way that will be hopefully healing for other people as well, and in hearing stories about people who healed, or in offering resonance for people who are suffering. And when I tell stories, I change the identifying information. But that's how I really feel, privileged.
Very nice.
And grateful. Being a therapist, I think, and I think this is true for those of us who do counsel others and do therapy and coaching, but especially when things get deeper, that you do see things and hear things that may first be happening in therapy offices and later show up more out loud, if you will, in the world. And it is a privilege to get to know people in that way and to see things and maybe then to look for them and ultimately help people lead the lives they want to lead and make their dreams come true and get out of their own way and identify things that stand in their way.
What a nice answer. If you're just joining us, our topic is, are you being gaslighted? What are the telltale signs? And my bold interview guest is Dr. Robin Stern, who is co-founder and associate director of the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. Find more about Dr. Stern at robinstern.com, RobinStern.com, or connect with her on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. You are listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 89.5, 89.7, and 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
And keep listening to KSQD this evening at 6 p.m. for our broadcast of New Dimensions program. Also broadcast every Wednesday at 9 a.m. here on KSQD and KSQD.org.
We're back. And Dr. Stern, or Robin,
thank you.
When reading the book, I observed and again, I know this is 2007, I observed that none of the stories referenced a male son gaslighting a mother. You know, a mother wants her son to think well of her. Most mothers will be adoring and loving, and the child's the love of her life, and he's her baby and would give her life for him if called to do so. We can see that a child would be that one special person whose approval she keeps trying to win even as his treatment of her goes from bad to worse. It appears to me that this world, this would be a very special hell when it comes to motherhood. What are your thoughts on a child gaslighting a mother or parent?
Well, I think it can happen either way. You know, it's a very powerful bond.
Right. Your book did have the mother to the son. I was just thinking the other way around. Mm-hmm.
I think that it's easy to see how a parent can gaslight a child because the parent is in the power seat. And early on in their in the child's life, you know, you go to the grocery store at 5 o'clock and you will definitely hear a parent say, at least one, "You're not hungry, you're tired," as the child is grabbing cookies from the shelf. And so, you know, that is an attempt at gaslighting in that moment, but not really to undermine the person's reality, the child's reality, as much as just to make sure they don't buy the cookies. Even little instances like that, or brief instances like that, repeated over time, can undermine the way somebody thinks about their decision-making, or thinks about the way they feel, and there can undermine a child's confidence in their feelings. And as a child grows up, as you are setting the example up, yes, definitely a parent can feel a child has power because if the child pulls away, if the child abandons the parent or cuts off or withdraws, it can be very painful. So there is a lot of power in that relationship. And Jill, I don't remember where your question started, but it is, of course, the case that a child can gaslight the parent. Oh my God, you know, you just like, give me a break. You're so paranoid. Like, I can't make a move without you doing something. Or there's really something wrong with you. You're so old fashioned. I mean, there are many, many things that are not even horribly mean, but just a way to get your mother off your back, that a mother could begin to think, you know what, maybe he's right, maybe I need to back off here. And then it can go, of course, escalate from there. There can be a lot more serious gaslighting, serious meaning, nastier, serious consequences, rather than just something in a conversation where a mother is trying to get her point across.
Right. Now, and a child could be, you know, 20, 30, 40, because they're always your child.
Yeah, and I think that I could imagine, although I haven't had the cases myself, but I could imagine a parent in need of care from a child who would not be willing to do that, unfortunately, and would then gaslight the parent. Mm-hmm. For even asking, or for complaining, or for having a need. I could imagine that scenario. Mm-hmm. And how painful that could be.
It also occurs to me that a person could be gaslighted by more than one individual at a time. and then when you think we're living, I think, in a gaslight culture, it can be really overwhelming. Am I right? Can a person be gaslighted by more than one person at the same time?
Of course.
Ah, that's what I thought.
And in many workplaces, you can be gaslighted by an entire department.
Oh,
or
wow.
The leadership of an entire department.
Uh-huh.
Where you know that there is, for example, a layoff about to take place, and yet you ask your supervisor and your supervisor's supervisor, and people say, no, you're... it's that time. Everybody's being a little sensitive, don't you think? And actually, it turns out you're not so sensitive, or maybe you are sensitive, but the layoff is still coming. And so, yes, you can be gaslighted by By many people. At the same time, in your interpersonal relationships, in my experience, you certainly can be gaslighted by more than one person, but very commonly, people are gaslighted by one person in particular.
That one special person that can get to the gaslightee.
Yes. In the trenches with the gaslightee, whether it's in a relationship or in a work environment or in a family situation. But certainly the horrendous example of gaslighting that came up last week with the revisionist history of slavery in Florida being mentioned, and where people are being asked to think that, or to tell themselves a story that they believe that slavery is anything but a benefit to their group, then they're not seeing history clearly. I mean, that is collective gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. Powerful.
With very dangerous ramifications.
Yes.
And easy to see how in a group where many people start to think that maybe they're wrong, that could be contagious.
Well, Robin, we actually don't have time to talk about the keep, stop, starts, you know, what you would recommend to people, just be gaslight free. But I would say that those that are interested, the Gaslight Effect Recovery Guide is probably a huge book that answers that particular question. Dr. Stern, you have written a brilliant book and accompanying recovery guidebook. In my view, gaslighting, when fully understood, which is what happened to me when I read your book and your recovery guide, fully understood is a revolutionary concept. Deeply understanding the concept helped me frame and better understand two relationships that I have pained over for many years. So thank you for being our bold and impressive guest. I'm so grateful for your time, and it was a real honor to interview you today. Thank you for joining us on Be Bold America.
Thank you so much, Jill. And I would just say for everyone listening, be good to yourself, have compassion, and have patience with yourself if you're struggling with a gaslighting relationship. You can get there, but have compassion.
Compassion for yourself, and also education is awareness. So now you're more aware that this could be a dynamic in your life.
Absolutely.
Learn more about...
Name it to tame it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Learn more about Dr. Stern and her books and podcast at robinstern.com. What's next on Be Bold America? Please join us on Sunday, August 13th for a special best of show titled, Are Humans a Cancer on the Planet? This month of July was the hottest month on Earth ever known to human civilization. What will next month bring? What will next July bring? In this interview, Dr. Warren Hearn states that he now calls Homo sapiens Homo oecophagus. What is its meaning? Homo oecophagus means man who devours the ecosystem. We are intimately beginning to realize just how much man has devoured since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and its consequences to our civilization. Don't miss Are Humans a Cancer on the Planet? Physician Dr. Warren Hearn, author of Homo Oecophagus, and local oceanographer and meteorologist Mike Clancy will discuss this on Be Bold America, Sunday, August 13th at 5 p.m. As a reminder, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you are listening to the show anytime. Now you may listen to the show anytime by subscribing for free through your favorite podcast platform, such as Apple, Google, and Spotify. I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer, Eliza James, and our station program director, Howard Feldstein. You are listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, Prunedale, Many Voices, One Station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for New Dimensions with Seth Shapiro. My name is Jill Cody, and thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.
Thank you.